case is Zawi versus Holder. Ms. Shepherd.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Shannon Shepherd, and I'm here on behalf of the petitioner, Mr. El-Ghazawi. In this case, the Board of Immigration Appeals, or the BIA, has erred in denying the petitioner's motion to reconsider.
As you begin, would you be kind enough to address our very recent decision in Sarmiento versus Holder?
Of course, Your Honor. I do believe this case is distinguishable from Sarmiento. The reason is that, first, this case was tied to a supplement to a motion that was filed and not a motion filed once the BIA had already made its decision. Second, this also offers the unique circumstance that the petitioner is alleging ineffective assistance of counsel, which does bring up additional exceptions to the time and a number of bars in the statute. And unlike in Sarmiento, this petitioner did argue in the alternative that even if the board found the motion to be untimely, that it should also consider equitable tolling under the circumstances.
You know, even if we could get around that decision, and it's a huge obstacle, I fear. The standard of review would be abuse of discretion. And, you know, I know that you argue that the wrong legal standard, that the BIA used the wrong legal standard. You know, you've yet to demonstrate due diligence or prejudice to the BIA's satisfaction, and that's within the BIA's discretion.
Yes, Your Honor, but in this case, there was an abuse of discretion, first of all, based on applying the wrong legal standard to a motion to reconsider. But secondly, because of the circumstances of this case where the petitioner did show that he acted diligently, he went to seek a second opinion of counsel before the BIA had made its first decision on his prior counsel's motion. That's highly unusual in any context. He had placed his trust in his prior attorney and, you know, sought a second opinion while the motion that his prior attorney filed was still pending. So it leaves him in a difficult position in terms of the diligence requirement as the BIA placed it on him. If he was supposed to seek a second opinion earlier in the process, then really what the BIA is saying that is that every alien needs to hire two attorneys, one to do the work and one to check the work. And that's an unreasonable standard to place on an alien who's hired someone who's holding themselves out to be an immigration expert.
I take it that you don't dispute that the only matter before us is the decision from the second motion to reconsider.
Yes, I agree with that, Your Honor. The standard, though, that the BIA applied necessarily involves some discussion of what had happened in the underlying motion.
You know, we've got the BIA arguing that he didn't exhaust his argument about 1003.2c4 because he didn't raise it until the opening brief in this appeal. And El-Ghazawi contends that it was raised, but concedes the provision wasn't cited.
Yes, Your Honor. The specific part of the Code of Federal Regulations was not cited below. However, the Code of Federal Regulations is promulgated by the agency itself. So they should be charged with some knowledge of its contents. And the argument was raised, although admittedly it was a terse argument and perhaps could have been developed more in the underlying motion. But the argument was made that because the prior counsel's motion to reconsider was pending, that this was a supplement that is allowable under the regulations and in general practice as well, Your Honor. In addition, the fact that the BIA had accepted the motion, the supplemental motion, without requiring any additional fees or forms, strengthens the argument that they should have treated it as a part and parcel to what was pending at the time, which was the prior motion to reconsider. The BIA erred then in finding that it was untimely because it wouldn't have been subject to the time constraints placed on a separately filed motion. The incorrect legal standard that was applied here did highly prejudice the respondent, or the petitioner, sorry, in this case. Mr. El-Ghazawi essentially never got an opportunity to put on his case because of the ineffective assistance of his prior counsel. And that denial of due process is the quintessential form of prejudice, particularly in a case where the immigration judge had already determined that Mr. El-Ghazawi should be allowed to file the application, but unfortunately it was not filed.
What new arguments were advanced in the motion to reconsider, pointing out error?
The motion to reconsider is not particularly for new arguments, but rather to ask the BIA to reconsider the arguments that were made from a different perspective. The motion to reconsider asks the BIA to consider that it applied the wrong legal standard and not to offer a new argument that wasn't made before. That would be more appropriate in a motion to reopen. But in this case, the petitioner alleged that the BIA erred when it found that the supplement was an untimely separate motion, and in the motion to reconsider pointed out that the reason it should have been considered timely was because it was filed while the other motion was pending. The arguments about equitable tolling were, you know, reasserted with the BIA in a different light, adding the elements of prejudice and the ineffective assistance of counsel.
Right.
I see. I'd like to reserve some time for rebuttal. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Ms. Shepherd. Mr. O'Connor?
Good afternoon, Your Honors. I am Blair O'Connor on behalf of the Attorney General. The sole issue before this Court is whether the Board did not abuse its considerable discretion in its October 20, 2011 denial of petitioner's second motion to reconsider because it found no error of law or fact in its prior May 11, 2011 denial of his motion to reopen. Now, there's two primary reasons why this Court should find that the Board did not abuse its discretion in the decision that's before the Court for review. First, petitioner's April 6, 2011 motion to reopen was clearly untimely filed because it sought to reopen the Board's August 20, 2010 dismissal of his appeal, and therefore it was filed well past the 90-day deadline. Second, the motion was not subject to the extraordinary remedy of equitable tolling due to petitioner's failure to demonstrate due diligence from the time he first became aware or should have become aware of his prior counsel's deficient performance until the time he filed his motion to reopen. Accordingly, the instant petition for review should be denied. Now, as Your Honors have pointed out, the procedural posture of this case is important. The only decision before the Court for review is the October 20, 2011 denial of the second motion to reconsider. This Court lacks jurisdiction to directly review the May 20, 2011 denial of the motion to reopen because no petition for review was filed from that decision. It's important to note that a motion to reconsider is not a process by which a party may submit, in essence, the same arguments that were already the subject of either the prior appeal or motion that was before the board. And that, in essence, was what the second motion to reconsider was, a rehashing of the same arguments the board had already considered in denying the motion to reopen.
What is your best case supporting your view that he has to demonstrate at this stage the unusual hardships instead of just showing that he didn't have his day in court?
Judge Rubner, those would be the general cases that say that in making an ineffective assistance of counsel claim, you know, under Lozada, the alien must also demonstrate prejudice. And the board found that he never really made any showing whatsoever of the fourth factor of cancellation of removal, which is that his removal would result in exceptional, extreme, unusual hardship to his qualifying relatives. But we would rely on, like, Lozada and this court's cases that have adopted Lozada, which hold that, you know, a showing of prejudice must be made within the context of the motion to reopen. Now, as we've argued, this court lacks jurisdiction to consider the new claim made for the first time before this court that the motion to reopen should have been considered timely filed under 8 CFR 1003.2C4. And the reason the court lacks jurisdiction is that argument was not exhausted before the board. It was vital and vitally important for him to specifically invoke that regulation when he made the motion to reopen before the board. The board is charged with interpreting its own regulations. Here, at no point was it ever told that, hey, this is really a timely motion under 0.2C4. And the reason the board didn't address it on its own is simply because it didn't apply. Even assuming that the issue was exhausted, this court should reject it because that regulation provides that a motion to reopen a decision rendered by an immigration judge that is filed while an appeal is pending with the board may be deemed a motion to remand and may be consolidated. That regulation does not apply to decisions rendered by the board after it's already dismissed the appeal on the merits. And that is why the board did not address that regulation on its own, simply because it does not apply. The motion to reopen did seek to reopen the August 20th, 2010 decision. In that regard, it was properly found to be untimely. And the board did not abuse its discretion in finding that this alien failed to demonstrate due diligence. In this regard, it's important to note that the statements of counsel are not evidence. And the only statements in this record that's before the court that attempt to demonstrate due diligence are, in fact, the unsupported statements of his attorneys, either in his motions or in their briefs before this court. The only evidence this court can consider in determining the due diligence question is the petitioner's affidavit made on April 5, 2011. And when you look at that affidavit, which is on page 83, I believe, of the record, you will see that he indicates that on October 7, 2009, the immigration judge deemed his cancellation application abandoned because it had not been filed by the September 22nd call-up date. The next sentence in that affidavit is that at some unspecified time, he then retained his current counsel and filed a motion to reopen. It is completely lacking in the record what steps at all he took to protect his rights for that over a year period. I mean, we would argue that he should have been aware of his prior counsel's deficient performance on October 7, 2009. When you look at the transcripts, Your Honor, you will see a lengthy discussion between the immigration judge and his former counsel about the importance of having call-up dates, why the 15-day was essentially settled on after consulting with the immigration bar, and how crowded the immigration dockets were. And that's why it's important that the applications and the supporting documents be submitted ahead of time so the parties can be prepared when they come in for the merits hearing. Here, the government did not even see that application until the day they came into the merits hearing, and they were not prepared to defend against it. There is a long, you know, several-page discussion which the petitioner sat there and listened to. He was definitely aware at that point in time that his attorney had had a problem and he had performed efficiently, and he needed to immediately take steps to protect his rights. It was simply not reasonable for him to continue to retain this attorney through the first appeal to the board, which only affirmed the immigration's finding that the application had properly been deemed abandoned, and then still stay with him through the first motion to reconsider. There is simply no demonstration of due diligence in this case, and the board did not abuse its discretion in denying the motion that is before this court for review. So, barring any further questions from the court, Again, we would ask that this board find the board did not abuse its considerable discretion in denying the second motion to reconsider. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. O'Connor. Ms. Shepard?
Thank you, Your Honor. Again, I'd like to respond to the government's contention that Mr. El-Ghazawi did not act with due diligence here. The government and, in fact, the BIA here are holding Mr. El-Ghazawi, a layperson, to a very high standard of knowledge on immigration law, even though the immigration judge, yes, did say at the final hearing, this was not filed on time, that is why I'm denying it. His attorney, who again had held himself out to be an immigration expert and in fact has practiced immigration law for some time, told him did in fact file an appeal, filed it timely, made the arguments. So for a layperson to have to say, then I'm not sure this appeal is the right course of action, and I think that my lawyer might have been ineffective, and I should probably go file a Lozada motion, when the layperson wouldn't know what those terms meant, per se, and wouldn't know what those requirements were and how they were laid out. As we argued before, the petitioner did, in fact, during the pendency of the motion to reconsider, seek a second opinion of counsel, which is at the time that he was able to ascertain what had happened and what the impact of that was. The BIA in this case did hold Mr. El-Ghazawi to an excessively high standard of knowledge of immigration law, and it seems that no alien would be able to overcome that if that is to be the standard that should hold going forward. Finally, the alien in this case, Mr. El-Ghazawi, had no other recourse but to file the supplemental motion, but to allege the ineffective assistance and to file the motion to reconsider. His options are out, and the reason that his options are out at this point are the ineffective assistance of his prior counsel, and we would hope that the court would take that under advisement. If there are no further questions. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Ms. Shepard. Thank you, Mr. O'Connor. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will